Hi, this is Steve Borsch with the Minivate Gang, and we're here at the Social Media Breakfast at Summit Brewery. And with me is...
Tim Elliott.
Phil Wilson.
Julio Ojeda Zapata.
And Graham Thickens.
Excellent. Well, what an event. What a great time. And I was interested in what you guys thought about the panel and the discussion, and it sure seemed to be... Well, of course, you led it, so probably have some opinions. But... big topic. What was the topic?
Well, we had a star-studded cast of media professionals, primarily from the MSM, the mainstream media world, and we sort of discussed, the industry, the current state of the industry. We talked about that whole FTC thing in terms of, disclosure and whether or not it affects professional journalists versus bloggers. And we kind of bounced around quite a bit. It was an honor to be in the presence of these media pros. I'm a fan of, Jason DeRusha, David Brower. These are all very sharp people that I follow on Twitter. It's great to be in their physical presence.
Yeah. So, Julio, how come nobody from commercial radio, we had a representation of public radio, we had, a couple of business publications, the Pi Press was there, and WCCO-TV. Why nobody from mainstream media? We've got mainstream radio.
I have no idea. I didn't have a hand in picking the panelists, and I don't know how those decisions were made. And, in fact, I don't count the Pioneer Press as a panel member because I was the moderator, so they had neither the Pioneer Press nor the Star Tribune, no Rachel Sassenberger. That's not a criticism, but, I think it was a somewhat random selection. Yeah. I don't have a big problem with it, but, there were some big gaps there.
Yeah, I only bring that up because I think that being a former commercial radio broadcaster, you never really get it out of your blood. So, I think that it took a long time, but I think that we're seeing some actual growth in the commercial space. The Clear Channels of the world, though they're considered the dark star of or the death star of radio, are making some big strides in that. And I really was somewhat disappointed that we didn't have any representation of that. But that being said, I thought there was some great conversation and some great questions. If I never hear the "How do I make CEOs understand social media?" question again, if I never hear that again, I'll be really happy.
They don't care.
It's like, okay, come on, let's move past that question. So I thought
there was Phil. No one brought up Motrin Mumps.
Nobody brought up no Motrin Mumps, and not a word about Domino's.
Really, what happened with the Motrin thing in the?
One of the comments that was made by David Brower, and again, I think we should point out here that we've invited all of the panelists to stop in during our podcast if they would like to. But and I'm sorry that David's not here because I'd like to get a little bit more into this comment that he made that all bloggers are perceived journalists. What do you guys think? Quite frankly, I think that's the biggest line of bullshit I've ever heard in my life.
But I think it has to do with the intention. If your intention is to be like a journalist, so if my intention is to review consumer electronics on my blog, then I should be held to the same standards that Julio does.
But isn't a blog really an abbreviation for personal weblog? And isn't that a personal thing? And does that necessarily make you a journalist because you write?
I think that's way outdated. I think that's, 1999. I think right now, that is not what a blog is.
Because here's the thing. The big acceleration is in people that are carving out a thought leadership space for themselves online. So they're whether they're a doctor of psychiatry that I know out on in Virginia Beach who's become a thought leader for the industry relative to ADD and ADHD by doing a blog, and now he's doing a podcast and yada, 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 to Om Malik or Mike Arrington, in the tech space with TechCrunch and GigaOm.
But would you consider those guys journalists, though?
Well, Om Malik, for sure, because he came out of Business 2.0, he's a classically trained journalist who has morphed himself into this...
Does the term journalist mean not? Does it imply non-biased?
I don't think you can make that very specific definition anymore. I think the word journalist has evolved fairly dramatically. I'll just give you an example of myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a journalist. I write Page One stories that are those stories that I write for Page One are impartial. They're written in classic journalistic style. I have to, quote all sides, write a balanced piece But I'm also a columnist. I review tech products, render opinions. And so there's a part of my job which is highly opinionated, but that doesn't in no way implies that I'm not a journalist.
Well, and I think the general public doesn't understand these distinctions, and maybe that's what David Brower was getting at. It's the perception that
I don't want to besmirch, you know, David, because I mean, David's opinion really, you know, has some intrigue to me, and I don't, you know, when I say it's the biggest bullshit I've ever heard, you know, that's not a reflection on David. I think if anybody made that statement, I'm thinking, wait a minute, I mean, if everybody that has a blog is a journalist, then everybody, and we talk about everybody that publishes is a journalist, then that makes Larry Flint a journalist, and I'm sorry, that's not the way I look at that. So I mean, that's the question. I mean, you know, but I guess I kind of disagree to some extent, Graham, that people are assuming that journalists are no longer impartial. I think that the assumption is still, when you say I'm a journalist, I think that the average everyday Joe Sixpack thinks, well, you're supposed to be impartial, you know. So, you know, a lot of the there was a big segment last night on the Daily Show where Jon Stewart went off on Fox News, and it was really he was very passionate about it. But you know, they were saying, okay, our news runs from this time in the morning to this time in the morning, and this time in the evening to this time in the evening, and the rest of it is opinion. Okay, so, but if somebody's a talking head sitting in front of a Chiron generated image next to them, there is this assumption, and here's David Brower now, this assumption that this is impartial news.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's almost like the public needs on television to see signs flat up, opinion,
right.
news.
Right, yeah, well, you know, how do you do that? Yeah.
But Julio, in talking about how he does both a column and news reporting, is that they really are two different things. And the great unwashed masses don't really understand these distinctions.
And also, the question is, yes, they're two different things. Like Julio wears two different hats. But if he's a journalist for one thing and an opinionator on another thing,
mm-hmm.
nobody's going to make that distinction. They're going to say he's a journalist or he's an opinionator. Either way, I mean, depending on their perception. So,
well, you know what, though? I mean, here's the challenge: is being somebody who's a real news junkie, and I really consume a tremendous. I mean, I follow 181 blogs and all the tech rags and all that stuff. I mean, I don't read it all; I skim it to see what's relevant. But there is so much information out there now, and so many facts, and then you see things like literally. Bases of bloggers and sites that are contrarian with respect to climate change and are picking apart the facts. And the same thing in the oil business. You know, there are blogs on both sides that follow the oil business. And on one hand, we've got, you know, 50, 100 years of supply. And on the other hand, no, we got 15 to 20. And so I think the biggest challenge is you talked about trusted networks, David. It's about who can you trust anymore? There really aren't any experts. There are people that have more information at a given snapshot of time. And I think that you brought it up. I mean, your point is one of, or yours, of differentiation, right? So
differentiating between what is between a journalist and what is a blogger.
What is a blogger, yeah. What's an opinion, what's fact.
Well, and if it's fact, just to bring you up to speed, so you're not surprised when you hear back the podcast, you know, your comment about every blogger is a journalist.
Bloggers are presumed journalists.
Bloggers are presumed journalists. I threw the bullshit flag on that, and you know, because it strikes me as that's just a really, I don't buy that. That's a big bunch of BS. I don't think there's this perception that every blogger is a journalist. So
might
that's
be a perception.
That's your right. Exactly. This is my opinion, and in no way reflects the feelings.
And I think one of the things that may trip you up, maybe not, but might trip you up, is I don't mean every blogger is a good journalist. Right. I just mean when we're talking about government involvement and regulation, those sorts of things.
Hmm.
I think we have to presume that bloggers, whether they're stating opinions or using facts to generate opinions, are journalists and should not be regulated by the government. At the same time, I am not saying all bloggers are great, just like I don't think all journalists are great. I mean, Steve, to what you were saying earlier, the challenge for the audience now is you got to work a little harder. Guess what? You know, there's a lot more information sources out there, and you're going to have to work a little bit harder to figure out which ones are right. And at the same time, you're going to have to overcome, maybe it's not a problem for you, but for a lot of people, you're going to have to overcome this psychological thing where the news becomes pleasure and entertainment, which is what leads people, I believe, to only seek out things they agree with rather than things they disagree with. In the old days where you had fewer choices, you almost had to be confronted with things that you disagreed with. Now you have so many choices that you don't.
Well, you know, that's interesting because a lot of people have asked me about what, and you did, about what my migration was from being somebody that could have and probably would have registered for the Republican Party in the 90s if that had been possible to where I am right now, which is, you know, my wife laughs at me and goes, you know what, you're no longer a closet liberal.
So you're pretty much out there, Steve.
I'm pretty much out of the closet on that one. But I forced myself in the last election to force myself to watch both Bill O'Reilly and Keith Olbermann.
To look at
Michelle Malkin and the Daily Kos. I mean, to try to go back and forth. And that fair and balanced view, so you can really see both perspectives, isn't something that you can go to any one place anymore and find. And you probably never could, but because everybody had an agenda of some kind. But now I'm seeing multi-author blogs come up that are clearly funded by organizations with an agenda. And they get scientists and, you know, they list their pedigrees and all of that. And they're putting forth this face of solidity and here's what we are. And they're not disclaiming and they're not disclosing enough about what that agenda is and what their perspective and motivations are.
But, of course, that's the job of other people. In the infosphere, absolutely.
Yeah.
And of course, you can again, one of the problems of the fire hose of information is you fall down the rabbit hole vetting the sources rather than actually focusing on the facts such as they are. But it's a pretty free marketplace right now. You certainly don't need to have as much financial support to become a powerful or a credible source as you used to. You don't need a printing press. You don't need a TV station. Anymore. Daily Kos is a great example. It's a guy.
Yeah.
It started out as a guy.
Yeah. Right.
And now they're paying for political polling that traditional media organizations aren't even paying for.
Right. Right.
So that's, I mean, again, there's a lot more chaos now.
Yeah.
But who of us in our businesses don't face a lot more chaos than we faced 20 years ago? I would, everybody is. I mean, there's so,
yeah.
so that's, the threats are asymmetrical right now, but so are the opportunities.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm making a living at a site that did not exist via a technology that did not exist when my career started.
Well, and look at Brian Stemmler out here, who's doing the video shoot, and he's streaming it through live stream, and people are talking in the mic, and he's spinning the camera over so people who aren't here can participate. I don't think
that went out over the live stream today.
Bummer. Well, at any rate, if the connection had in fact worked. But to your point, though, about opportunities, I mean, even with us live blogging events, actually being there and publishing stuff and all the other things that we all pay attention to didn't exist even a couple years ago.
Well, is the future of journalism, especially print journalism, to curate news and to bring it online, or is it to be more like a MinPost where you're actually bringing the journalism and this being an online sort of entity where you have staff journalists, right?
Boy, I sure hope print as a technology does not spend a lot of time aggregating because it's not the best technology for that.
Why isn't it the best?
Well, for one thing, it's easier to get your aggregation online. It's it's a quicker hit. It's the link economy. It's easier to link. You know, you remember QCAT from the Dallas Morning News that didn't work so well. But online, I think there's clearly a sweet spot for some organization. NPR apparently is trying a version of it beginning January 1st to be both a content creator and a content aggregator. And on some level, Julio and I think are both doing that right now. I mean, Julio doesn't just write his own stories. He writes his own columns. And via his Twitter feed, he's aggregating the interesting content both on his beat and stuff he just sees as a citizen via his site. Now, the interesting question, one of the interesting questions I face is, I would love to figure out a way to get MinPost more revenue via my Twitter feed. I think my Twitter feed has value. It's obviously not inestimable value, but it has value. And yet it kind of exists out here in space. It pushes some content, some page views their way. But I almost wish I could, you know, I wish I could get more top of mind for MinnPost via what I'm doing outside of MinnPost. So that's something, I don't know the answer to that. Maybe you guys do.
Well, there are ways.
Well, yeah, but does that move you from the representative of MinnPost? You know, you're no longer David Brower, you're a representative of MinnPost.
Well, I am.
Does that all of a sudden limit you and what you're going to tweet about if your stream
not me. I'm in a good spot for doing this sort of thing. I mean, I have prized flexibility and freedom in my career more than I have gone for reach. And so this is part of that. You're right, I think for a lot of journalists, if they become corporate tweeters, that would limit, because the organizations have some imperative. Fortunately, with MinnPost, they don't with regards to me. They like what I do. I add value to their site. I'm one of their most read writers. I've got one of their, you know, largest Twitter feeds. So, at some point, I'm just musing. I'll do it anyway.
Right.
But I wish that one of the reasons I'm able to tweet as much as I do during the day about stuff I want is that my job allows me to do that. And so I wish the organization could benefit even more than they already are for it. And I honestly don't know.
Well, you can run ads in your Twitter stream now.
I actually
signed on with one of those just to see how it would work. I think they put one ad a day, and I haven't seen them show up yet. But I thought, this is going to be interesting. I got to see how this works. I can't remember the name of it.
See, to me, I have no problem with advertising within the Twitter stream, but I don't want one of my tweets to go out that's just an ad.
Correct.
I don't mind if my tweet has content and then an ad or a link to an ad.
Right.
That's not a problem. But if all of a sudden, bang, it's just an ad from Filson, I don't want that.
See, here's what I love. I love people that have implemented Twitter tools or something in their blog so that when they post, it automatically sends out a link. Or like you do, like Mad, where you're reading stuff and you're putting links in all the time to articles. I follow MinnPost on Twitter strictly because when something appears, then I don't even have to go to the site. I mean, it's in my reader as well. But sometimes
it's a real time.
But
yeah, right.
I can get it on my iPhone I really haven't found a good reader yet on the iPhone, so I don't have one. Same with you. You're doing the same thing, Julio, with sending out links to stuff, you know, and you got your posters set up that way and so on. And so, you know, I follow the Minnesota Historical Society of all things because they send out, you know, here's what happened today in history. And there was all these little chunks of value that happened. And I would argue that it's the tools to allow personal aggregation that are not here yet. So I just saw a demo of a couple of young guys, 19-year-old guys here in town who have created a tweet deck on steroids, if you will, which allows you to create groups of stuff. Yeah.
Tweet deck is about too much on steroids.
Yeah, I know, but this is something where you can actually manage groups. So you could say, I want all my publications to be in one group, and I want all my tech friends
to be
in another
group.
Are you talking about Clove?
Yes.
Clove,
yeah. And you've seen it.
Yeah, you did a review on it.
Yeah, yeah. And so when I look at stuff like that as I begin to have some ahas, if I only want to see what's happened with MinnPost and MNHS and so forth, then I can click on that group and go in and look at that,
right?
And so forth. And those are the kinds of things that I think will even add more value to the feed aspect of Twitter, which will then allow you to say, hey, we've done something of value. Now we can put that out, and if you're interested, click here and you can come and see it, right? So it's a promotion or an attraction rather than a promotion. It's not slamming your feed and your followers with a bunch of ads saying, hey, come and, you know, go buy this or come and do this.
David, do you have an opinion on what the...
I bet he does.
Now, he's not a very opinionated.
No, not at all. He's very quiet.
Do you have any thoughts on the journalistic potential of Twitter lists, which are just hitting the mainstream now? How twittering journalists like you, like me, could harness this new tool in effective ways?
I just got lists yesterday.
Yeah,
and then it went away, and then it came back. So I'm pretty new to it, but I will say this: in probably the hour that it was live for me, the thing that hit me right away was, oh, this is going to be a lot better way to find people to connect with. because I'm going to look at other people's lists. I am very choosy about my followers, about my who I follow, which is a little bit of a problem because I don't mean not to follow a lot of people. It's just at some point there becomes too much noise with the signal. You know, the signal to noise ratio doesn't get very good. But, you know, I'm always, primarily for me, I'm looking for other journalists or other media thinkers because that is a professional obligation that I have. And just yesterday, I made a point to go through some of your lists. I think you maybe had a list. Some of the other media people who have lists, and see if I was missing anybody. And the truth is, I was missing a couple of people, not as many as I feared. And so that was a great way to add things on. I think, you know, Steve, you were talking about channels, and I wish I could use TweetDeck, but it's just there's just too much text there. But it struck me that if I can figure out how to use this list thing properly, mm-hmm. I might be able to follow more people because I can create discrete lists and go there. Then again, I think I'm in a very familiar end-user space, which is I really wish somebody had a compelling master inbox because I am, you know...
You mean a universal inbox that
yes,
pulls everything
email,
in?
Email, Twitter, you know, everything. I haven't found
it. I've lusted after that myself. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, but we can aspire. Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm finding now, you know, one of my disappointments with Google Wave, for example, is that while...
It is too complex.
I think they'll figure that out. Yeah. But I mean, it's sort of a closed system. It's like, really? I can't look at my Gmail through Google Wave?
Except, though, that they're going to, at least they've said they are, really accelerate the embedding capabilities, so you know all the gadgets will be able to be embedded and all of that. So in theory, you'll be able to set up a Wave and little pings with different things in them, I would assume. But
it's a
then it's going to be, you know, then the next challenge is getting all that down into a usable format that you can do mobily, because that's really
true.
Where it all has to get to eventually. You got to be able to deal with this stuff mobile.
Well, here's a question for both of you, Julio and David. Relative to analytics and seeing where people are coming in, what percentage do you think, each one of you, what percentage do you think click on links from Twitter and come in and read what you're posting, what you're writing?
I haven't done a really diligent job of tracking that, but I do have a Bitly account, and I've poked in there, and the percentage is substantial. It's not minuscule. I'm at this point have more than 8,000 followers, and if I put a link out there, guaranteed 75 to 300 people will click that link. And if it's a Pioneer Press article, that's all traffic going to the Pioneer Press. It's not huge, but it's fairly substantial. Okay. And if I tweet something that's popular and gets retweeted a lot, you know, the more the merrier. So I have my different tools sort of feeding on each other. Like I recently migrated my blog, and I had misgivings about that because I lost most of my RSS subscribers. I'm not going to get all of them back, but. Since I automatically tweet every time I put a blog post out, all of those, you know, thousands of followers are all becoming aware of my blog, and so my blog, you know, remains viable largely because of Twitter. And since my blog is now, you know, hosted at TwinCities.com, that's traffic for my employer, so it's great. Yeah.
And for me, I do look at the stats. I have about 2,300 followers, so I'm about a quarter of Julio's size, although MinPost's main feed, which also includes my stuff, is a lot bigger. So the last time I checked Bitly links was probably about 4 months ago. I could reliably expect 50 to 60 from that. But when I look at refers via Google Analytics to Twitter, it's like I said in the presentation, I would say 10 to 20% of inbounds coming from Twitter and Facebook. And to me...
That's actually pretty amazing.
That's really
that's great. It is.
Now, again... I'm a niche publication, and so it's probably easier for those numbers to be higher because I think I have more of a direct relationship with my readers. But it's still really friggin' good. And what was nice for me is I would tweet anyway because I really enjoy it and it does improve my journalism. But the fact that it also clearly has a commercial benefit. And to take it just one step further, real quickly, like I said in the presentation. We are, maybe like the rest of the world, are moving away from a pure page view model to a heavy engagement model. And although I haven't done any stat work on this, I have no doubt that we are deepening the engagement with our core, which Joel Kramer, I think, just estimated about 25,000 people via social networking. And I think that's huge. I think that's hugely important because, frankly, we are going to be coming back to you and saying, we're going to need a little more of your money, please.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're going to be more likely to say yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Because now you have an investment in MinPost.
Well, yeah, and hopefully, you know, we provide value initially and we add value by engaging.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know we're running lower on time here, but I wanted to move beyond journalism or away from journalism a second, because when we talk about media and social media, you know, traditional or whatever you want to call it, traditional media and social media, we talk a lot about journalism, and there's a lot of discussion around that. But let's just talk about social media used by traditional entertainment media. Tell, you know, what are your guys' experiences with, you know, that thing that really causes you to think a whole lot less, you know, about, you know, is this ethical or is this not? You know, because we're following things that are strictly entertainment streams. I bring that up obviously because you know, I have Comic Twit, but you know, are we seeing adoption from traditional media that provide entertainment taking advantage of those things?
Well, let's see. Last night I tweeted the meat hand. Somebody made a meatloaf in the shape of a hand.
Oh, God.
I saw that. That was really awesome.
I don't know if that qualifies as entertainment.
Well, in a sick, twisted sort of way, David. I don't think it qualifies as journalism. I don't know.
And I tweeted a picture that the headline was, "Don't put alcohol near your jack-o'-lantern."
Yeah, I saw that.
That was great.
And so in the vein of entertainment, my use of social media evolves. Like I blogged, and then I started tweeting, and then I discovered the whole streaming style of blogging, which is very different, in which I become sort of a mini Boing Boing. I see this wacky video or this wacky picture, and with posters, it's so easy to throw it out there. It's an interesting journey of discovery for me in social media, because every so often I'll stumble on this tool that makes so much sense to me that without very little effort I can sort of integrate it into my routine when I thought, you know, I had no time for anything else. And so,
Does that move you from, and I ask this generally in question in general, not just of Julio as the journalist, or does that move you into the celebrity zone rather than the business mind or journalist mind? I mean, does that take you into that celebrity mode?
It doesn't take me to the celebrity role, but it takes me from journalism to use your word, entertainer. On my posters, I am in no way, shape, or form a journalist. I'm purely out there to amuse, to entertain. That's an interesting new role for me. I've never done that before.
Yeah, well, I would just use the term personality instead of celebrity.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And that is, I think, what especially more mainstream journalists. I mean, be honest with you. A year or two ago, Julio was a byline to me.
Right.
Now I know a heck of a lot more about him. We also...
And we're not sure we like it.
I'm pretty sure we like that. And does it mean that I regard his journalism any less? No, I regard it more now. I clearly do. So, you know, while there's no doubt Bill O'Reilly, good example, that personality can carry you away. Can carry you away from journalism. It doesn't have to. And I think in a lot of cases, I mean, Jason DeRusha, look at him. I mean, he's a journalist. There's no doubt about that. But he's a personality, and not in the lame sense that TV people are personalities. He's a genuine personality. And
so
it's pretty cool.
Where does it change from being a personality to being a celebrity? Because, you know, being a personality, you've got six people in a room here, and we each know a little bit about each other's personality, and we know that from personal interaction. But since you're putting it out there on a public, easily accessible, wide open network or a media channel, doesn't that just push you into celebrity or wannabe celebrity?
Welcome to the future of news.
Yeah, but you know, I've been blogging since 2004, I've had a bunch of different experiences. And then when I got the iPhone, I had, well, the blogging experiences were, you know, doing a post about Leopard coming out, my top five favorite features of Leopard, that ends up as number three on Dig.
Spots.
And it's like, you know, 65,000 page views in, you know, 6 hours. And thinking then, oh my God, maybe I should go start a Mac blog. I mean, I literally started to have those thoughts. And then when I got the iPhone in it, I'm standing in the car wash, my car is coming through, and I glance over and burst out laughing, took a picture of Armorall's ass wipes. And just exactly how they had it merchandised, I moved my head slightly and it said glass wipes.
Yeah, sure.
And I took a picture of it and tweeted it. And I got to tell you, I got more retweets on that than on any other thing I've ever done. And
but
so,
doesn't that imply that if you notice and you're interested and you're curious, and believe me, I'm right up there. The reason I got into radio was because ages ago was because I'm a ham. I'm a narcissist. So doesn't that sort of if you give a rip that how many ever page views you got on Dig or how many people saw this picture of ass wipes, is that, I mean, you, it matters to you. So You're moving beyond wanting to be a personality or being a personality because you are realizing celebrity.
But here's the kicker. The kicker is that there are many people that happens to, and they accelerate down that road. You know, if your respective incentives, Julio and David, if your respective incentives are page views, then every time you write, you're going to think about what do I have to write to create enough pages.
And I very very diligently I try to avoid that mindset.
Yeah. I mean I do a little SEO when I write. There's no doubt about that. But the nice thing for me, I don't know how it is for people who are half my age, but the nice thing for me is I've been doing this a while. And I was in morning radio for 3 years, so I know what it's like to be a very low level celebrity. You know, I know what my values are. And I'm comfortable that my brand, if you will, has an element of fun, no doubt about it. Has to, always has. It's part of who I am. But it also has a large element of substance and thoughtfulness. And so, you know, I guess maybe once in a while, or who knows, maybe constantly, I do sit there and think, you know, am I making sure to project fully who I am? I'm not afraid to project fully who I am. I just want to make sure that I'm doing that in an authentic and accurate way. Am I being swayed by the dark side of the force? Sometimes I think about that. But in general, I don't think it's a huge problem. Being a celebrity, if that should ever happen, is not necessarily a bad thing. It's only a bad thing when it carries you away from the light. And I'm in this game to inform people.
Yeah.
And sometimes information is entertainment, and so that's okay.
So why, then, are neither one of you, for instance, doing what All Things D did, which really surprised me? Remember, we talked about this a long time ago, Grant.
I was going to bring the guy, these folks up.
About the guy that does that minute, I forget what his name is now.
John Paskowski.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he does this, and he uses his MacBook and the webcam in his MacBook up on a riser so the camera's at eye level, and he does his shtick at in his home office every day. And when I first saw that, I thought, well, qualitatively, it wasn't that great. And that was just the first time. And now every other time I've watched, it doesn't matter. What matters is what he's talking about. But also, I didn't pay any attention ever to what he wrote, ever. I never, ever read his stuff. Mm-hmm. But as soon as he started doing that, then all of a sudden, then I would read his stuff, and I could hear his voice mm-hmm. as I read his stuff. So have you guys looked at branching out in terms of maybe doing, you know, webcam video or doing a podcast? Or
you've done it,
right? I've dabbled in video. It's sort of gone up and down. I've produced David Polk like videos that are not quite as wacky and personality driven.
So no singing.
They're more no singing. Okay. Right. Yeah, I've done a little bit of that. I remember very distinctly many years ago when I first became a tech writer, and editor was saying, you need to become a personality, you need to become a brand, we need to do up a cartoon of you. And at that point, I found that so absurd and so abhorrent, but I've sort of moved in that direction. I have my little avatar that I put everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so I do personal branding. I think that's part of the shtick. Yep. I have to do that.
I mean, for me, there is a balance question. I do not want a life cast. I mean, I like having an offline life, and I probably need more of one. I'm also not a visual person. I'm a text person. And so I don't think I don't know that I would feel super comfortable communicating via the camera in my MacBook. But if I did, I would. I mean, again, example of a guy who's totally comfortable, Jason DeRusha. Jason Cam, which, you know, admittedly gets 50 people watching it, but he's playing with the form.
It precisely, he's taking a risk.
Journalists used to be super complacent. Now they are super anxious. And so if you're not taking some chances, you're probably screwing up.
Well, and we've talked a lot about that when we've done the Best Buy stuff. For instance, we were actually getting concerned that we were becoming sort of this Best Buy showcase.
Fanboys.
Well, yeah, so I remember. And look for a post on 12-4 sometime later this afternoon.
That's right.
But in all seriousness, they were the only ones who were doing a lot of risk-taking at the corporate level and trying things. And we kept writing about it because they kept doing all these innovative things. And they still are. It slowed down maybe a little bit, but I would argue that that's what you guys are doing too. I mean, MinPost is that writ large. And everything that you're doing relative to trying out all these different technologies, both of you leveraging Twitter. I mean, it's the same sort of thing. It's like nobody really knows. There's not one person in that room, I would bet, that could accurately predict what things are going to look like in a year. But you know what? If we don't try all this stuff, if we don't get in the game and play with it and learn about it.
I'll give you an example of something interesting that we did with posters at the paper. During the spate of big sporting events, we created a separate blog, and then we invited people to like iPhone other videos or pictures in from games.
But you moderated
from the Twin Cities
you didn't
Marathon.
Let them publish.
Yeah, it's very simple. You preview the image if it's obscene or whatever, and I got a few of those.
Yeah, well, where can we find those?
Black Channel. And how many submissions and how many page views?
Well, that was interesting. I don't remember the numbers offhand, but it took about a 2-week period to get X number of submissions. I don't remember what the figure is. It was fairly substantial. But here's the kicker, and this was very interesting. We said, oh, that was kind of fun. This we had this snowstorm coming in. Let's do let's have people send in their snow pictures. So we created a separate posters blog for that. Send in your snow pictures. And in one 24-hour period, we matched and exceeded the amount of sports pictures. And in a million years, would have never wagered that a standard snowstorm would outperform these huge, major sporting events.
What was the snowstorm? I missed it. Must have missed it.
Oh, it was the early Columbus snowstorm.
It was a snowfall.
Okay, right, yeah.
But I mean, here's the thing about that. You stumbled into something that TV websites know really well. Mm-hmm. The killer app for TV websites is weather, period.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Period.
Killer app for TV is weather.
Right. And so, and what's more, if you talk to anybody on the TV side, on the web TV side, they will tell you that the actual video, it's only about lengthening the time per user. It's not the most popular thing on their site by any means. It's a text-based, text-driven thing, which I think is really, really interesting. So, but that shows, you know, and Jason will tell you this, I've been on other panels with him, that he spends more time than TV people might think advisable rewriting his scripts for the web, because that's how audiences are doing it. So while people like me are trying to figure out, well, is there some multimedia way that works, he's sitting there trying to figure out a way to do things in my space, my professional space. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome, because he's actually a pretty good writer, and I like reading his stuff, and I especially like it when he rewrites it for the web.
So if we're sitting here in 2014, are we seeing a lot of user-submitted news that's being put into Pioneer Press or MinPost or Star?
Well, that posterous thing pushed the envelope because most people, didn't trust it. You know, we put out an email address, send your photos, and a lot of people probably didn't trust that. A lot of people didn't grok the concept. A lot of people don't have email-capable handsets. It's still a relative minority. But there's a whole new generation of people that will all have the capability to do what we ask of them. So this posters thing, for instance, that we did was mildly successful. But I have visions in the future. You know, we're in the Super Bowl. And hundreds, thousands of people are in the stadium, you know, iPhoning stuff into us. I think at some point, what worked relatively well at some point in the future could be wildly successful. So,
and the Strib is you know, Game Face Minnesota. If you look at their high school sports site, which has had some success elsewhere in the country by other publishers. There's a lot of more user-generated content. They have it more formally integrated into their architecture. MintPost is not not that innovative in terms of user-generated content showing up on site. We moderate our comments, for one thing, and our getting, you know, registering is not the easiest thing in the world on our site. So it will be one to watch. Because, you know, on some level we have the online-only fairy dust sprinkled over us with the nonprofit fairy dust on top of that. But in many ways, we're a fairly conventional site. And so if we succeed by doing that, maybe that says something about the necessity of broader experimentation. If we change, it'll probably say something about the fact that that broader experimentation is really, really necessary.
I was going to bring up and ask Jason, I didn't have a chance to, about the CCO Mobile Local News iPhone app. And I believe they've turned on citizen submissions via that. But I think it may have just started, so I don't think they have much history on that. But it sounds like you, Julio, are getting a lot more action just via Posterous, maybe, than what they might be getting through this fancy new iPhone app of theirs.
Exactly. The poster thing is just basically throw something against the wall and see if it'll stick or slide down. So and we're going to be making more experiments like that.
Yep. I think it's great.
It's smart to try apps. It's smart to try posters. It's smart to try anything.
Yep. Yeah. Let it all go. Yeah.
$100 bills, we should try.
There you go.
For submissions.
Like those.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we should probably wrap up a little bit, let people get on with their day, and first and foremost, thanks very much, David.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Julio, for joining us on the podcast, and also thanks to the folks at Summit Brewery for allowing us to move into a space that's a little more quiet, more quiet than where we were, so thanks very much to those folks.
All right, thanks everybody, and we'll get this posted, hopefully, yet today.
Our pleasure.
Thanks.
All right.